Welcome to a policy podcast brought to you by Science Magazine. The US National Academy of Sciences celebrates its 150th anniversary next week. Bruce Albert, Science Magazine's editor-in-chief, was president of the Academy for 12 years. Bruce, what are some of the things you're most proud of achieving as president?
I think one of my major accomplishments at the Academy was to get the three academies, engineering, medicine, and science, to work together effectively. Historically, there had been some tension between the different academies, and one of my major roles was to make sure that everybody was treated equally. And one of my main focuses was trying to get a real cooperative feeling going and a real synergy going between those three organizations. That, I think, was the most important thing I did.
And do you think that feeling of cooperation is something that exists now within the National Academy?
I hope so. I think the Academy always could do more. I regret that I didn't do some things that I should have thought of. Of course, that's always true. I think the Academy could be a powerful force for empowering younger scientists to be more effective in their interactions with society. There's an international movement called the Young Academy. I've been a big supporter of it at Science Magazine. I think the idea of older academies empowering the best of younger people to work together on doing something for their country is a powerful idea, and I'm only sorry I didn't think of it myself. And we always need more out of the Academy because science needs to have a higher role in society more generally.
And how much does how the Academy was created inform its role and its goals, you know, for example, when you were president?
Of course, you have to respond to the government because that's part of our charter. It's not always easy because, for example, many of the most important things we did were ordered really by Congress when they were setting up the annual appropriation for the Environmental Protection Agency or whatever agency. They would put into the language, you're going to get this money, but a little bit of this money you should spend to have the Academy do a study of your work on air particulates or whatever it is. And almost always when we do studies about how the government's doing something, we find it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. Nobody likes getting public advice that's critical, but we need to have critical advice. The Academy is a very unique organization in that we don't do a study and then let the EPA see if they like it before we make it public. This is what gives us value. We're an independent, unbiased, non-political voice of what science says about a process. And for that reason, we have a very extensive report review process, which makes sure that there's evidence for every statement and that the committees don't try to get in the way of politicians by going beyond their charge. But nevertheless, one of the important parts of my job was protecting the independence of the Academy, because particularly after 9/11, agencies who were going to get a report that was partly critical of their performance would say, well, if you let this be publicly known, terrorists will take advantage of whatever it was we weren't good at. And they called it sensitive but unclassified information. Our reply was always that if you want it to be classified, that's fine, but we're not going to have information given only the agency, because that's a very dangerous way to start proceeding and it destroys the independence of the Academy. So we didn't always make the government happy. And that was an important part of my job.
And you mentioned uniting the engineers and medicine and the science academy. While you were there, could you see how that had an impact on how the National Academy operated?
I was very pleased to have a real partnership with the other two presidents and very much felt that we were on the same team and doing the same thing. It's probably worthwhile saying that one of the big benefits of the Academy mechanism is that besides producing a report, you build a community. I would argue that in some cases, more important than the report was the communities that we built that lasted afterwards. New kinds of connections, new ways of thinking that survive long after the report is finished. A very important report that we did very early in my term was producing the first ever National Science Education Standards. We had a lot of trouble doing that. In the process of doing it, we discovered that in the post-Sputnik era, when there have been major science education reforms, the scientists had taken over, and the people who were professional educators felt that scientists were arrogant and that they couldn't work with scientists. And so a very important part of that study was we really did create a community that now there's much more respect and understanding between scientists, professional science educators, and outstanding teachers.
And are there any accomplishments or anything that happened during your presidency that really affected science, the scientific community, in ways that people might not really be aware of?
People forget this. When Bill Clinton came into presidency, and that was right when I got to Washington and started my term, there was a rumor floated from the vice president's office that every scientific grant application should explain what that science is going to do for human beings, how it's going to be useful. This rumor was not appreciated by the scientific community because it meant that fundamental investigations of the nature of the universe, basic science, would be devalued because you can't predict what it's going to be good for. So the Academy immediately got to work in 1993, and we produced a series of 20 pamphlets called Beyond Discovery, The Path from Research to Human Benefit. The first one we did was, for example, the Global Positioning System. Where did the Global Positioning System come from? And we pointed out that a fundamental discovery was the invention of atomic clocks by physicists, which earned a Nobel Prize, but everybody thought was useless. And we did that over and over 20 times. And those things are wonderful documents, permanent value. And that gets to the point that most of what the Academy does is provide advice on policy issues that have some underlying science basis. But a minority of what the Academy does, it's also very important, is make sure that the policies for science that determine how science operates and where money comes from, how it's distributed, that's done in a very effective way.
Well, speaking of not being able to predict the future, do you see the Academy being a constant thing, certain things that you think will always be constant when it does come to the National Academy?
Well, the constant thing has to be an independent, honest voice for science and collecting the best evidence we can to apply to every important issue. Science is never certain. We know from looking backwards that our best answers today will be modified in some ways. Scientists have a hard time dealing with people who are so sure of themselves and dogmatic about things. And we need to train scientists how to deal with those issues. And so I think the Academy has an even bigger role to play to be on top of that and somehow try to be a voice of reason.
Bruce Alberts, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Read Bruce Alberts' editorial, Why National Science Academies, in Science's March 1st issue. I'm Meghna Sachdeva. On behalf of Science Magazine and our publishers AAAS, thank you for joining us.